Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. Thank you. Good evening, one and all, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's most enduring, long-lasting outdoor talk radio program. We welcome you to our show tonight. We want to remind you this is Memorial Day weekend, a good time for reflecting and being appreciative of the fallen heroes who helped keep our freedoms here in the United States.
You're no veteran, Paul.
Pardon?
You're a veteran Navy man.
Yes, sir, I am, and I want to say that... I hope you'll join me in saluting my late brother-in-law, who died in the North Atlantic on a submarine in 1964.
No fooling.
And many, many others along with him. And we appreciate their service, and we hope you have a good, happy Memorial Weekend, but we hope you'll be a little reflective and appreciative of those who have served their country and died for freedom.
Certainly.
Okay, our guest tonight, I'll introduce in just a second. We've got a nice show lined up tonight. I'm always, always happy to interview this particular guest because it's always interesting. We get a lot of good calls from folks. First, the crew that make the show possible every week, the engineer, who has a new nickname, the man in the studio behind the taco switches. He's now known, no longer is he the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream. He has a new handle. We call him the Phantom Angler of Grand Lake Stream.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Good.
I'll never know if I'm there or not.
And also, the man who is with us in the flesh, not in his virtual phone booth with his mask on tonight, but he's unmasked and he's here in person with his very sartorial shirt, my co-host, Robert Lehman.
Appreciate it. Thank you ever so much.
Nice shirt. Is that an L.L. Bean?
It certainly is, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Almost all my shirts.
Love the color. Beautiful shirt.
Yep. Well, why not?
Anyway, nice to have you on board. Our guest tonight, you may have heard of him. We've had him on the show before. I think he's been on the Tom Gosey show a couple of times as well. He's Professor Jim Dill from the University of Maine Cooperative Extension Service, and he's here to talk about one of our most interesting topics in Maine these days. He's going to talk to you about ticks. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here. Yes, that's a lot of ticks this year, that's for sure.
Yeah. We'll be talking to Jim after the trivia question. If you have a question for Jim, and we know you will have, usually the phone rings off the hook. If folks want to call, Bob, what's the toll-free number?
1-800-966-1039, and you have to be local even. You have to dial the whole number even if you're local.
Right.
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, jot that number down, and if you have a tick question for Professor Dill, you can do so right here at that number. You're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9, and 95.1 in Rockland, the Voice of Maine.
And we're on the Internet, a podcast.
Yes, sir. You can look us up on WVOMFM.com, right, Jim? I mean, right, Norm?
Yes. Okay. I'm looking at Jim. So. Okay.
Right. Now I got to get see. You're Norm and you're Jim and you're Bob. All right, I got that straight. Okay, and I didn't have any wine with my pork chop tonight either.
No, that's right.
Okay, Outdoor Digest time brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. I want to remind you once again, the Northwood Sporting Journal, you can subscribe to it by calling our office during the week at 732-4880. Ask for Alicia, or you can sign up online. Check us out at sportingjournal.com. We've got a brand new, spanking new website, and there's an opportunity for you to subscribe there as well. We cover the outdoors, hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, you name it, and we cover it 12 times a year, monthly. So check us out, and you can also get us at most newsstands as well. A couple of boating safety reminders. I don't know if you heard about this, but they had an incredible rescue up to Chamberlain Lake. Did you happen to see that?
No, I did not see that.
Two folks in their canoes coming across Chamberlain, a big blow. They capsized, and in ice cold water, high waves. Ooh. And luckily, the man had a PFD, and attached to it was one of those spot GPS locators.
Wow, that's good.
That's an incredible story. He hit the button. The signal went to the ranger headquarters, and within 20 minutes, the rangers and the game wardens were on the lake, and they were able to find these people. Listen to this. They found them because
it's GPS.
They couldn't see their bobbing heads in the waves of Chamberlain Big Lake.
Yeah.
And they found them because of the GPS locator beacon.
Yep. Amazing.
So I checked those out. Those are expensive, but it saved his life.
Yeah,
so.
I believe you can also like sign up like monthly for the service. Yeah, yeah, so you don't have to necessarily buy the whole year.
Yeah, what a great deal. Yeah.
That water is cold this time of year, I'll tell you.
Yeah. They said even with their jackets on, they would not have survived. No. Hyperthermia would have taken them. Yeah. So that's a rescue story with a happy ending.
It certainly is.
It's not always happy, though, in boating, so we want to remind you again, the water's still cold this time of year. Mm-mm. Be careful out there. And, you know, in the summer, I suppose, if you're a good swimmer, you don't have to wear a PFD. But if you're in the water this time of year, fishing or boating, good idea to put on the PFD. It can save your life. So remember that and boat safely. Use your head and operate carefully on the water. And if your boat has an attachable engine cutoff switch, you can utilize that as well. So if you did go over, the boat wouldn't keep going. Anyway, check the weather before heading out. That's always a must as well. Okay, one other thing before we get to Bob's famous fishing report. The Scudic Bass Tournament, we talked about that, I think, last week.
Last week.
And I don't think I remember the exact date, but I think it's around July 11th, I think. But anyway, check it out. They have a website. Just go to Scudic Bass Tournament, I believe it is, and or scudicbasssomething.com. And they will have a website where you can sign up. And we'll have more information as time passes. Anyway, it's a $2,000 purse, which is not too shabby.
Yeah, it's not too sloppy either. No,
you know, that would be worth taking part, I would think. So we'll tell you more about that in later shows. Right now, it's time to bring in the band.
I'm the big boss fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
So yeah. He was off this week, wasn't he?
Yes, he's off. This is not his week.
No, it's not. You were two beats behind.
A lot of people didn't know that was me. you just anyway, kept him off, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Hey, what's going on in the fishing world?
First off, I ought to remind people again about the Bangor Atlantic Salmon Clubhouse in Brewer.
Yep.
Is having a cookout. And on Wednesday, June 9th at 5:30. And their guests are allowed, and donations are also allowed. And it's going to be a lot of fun. They probably will have a guest speaker. So I just want to remind people to the Bangor Salmon Club in Brewer.
All right.
I'm sure it'll be mapped on Route 9, where the road is and everything, so they can find it easily. And I'm sure they'll be marked. Very interesting clubhouse, by the way. There's a lot of old pictures in there.
Yeah.
There used to be.
A lot of nostalgia.
It is. It certainly is.
Yep.
So you went fishing this week.
Bob Mercer and I sneaked out and went down to his favorite honey hole on the airline. I can't name it. He'd be disturbed with me. But
I fished it a number of times.
You fished it. You know what I'm
talking
about.
There's a lot of brownies in there.
Yeah, well, we caught a couple. I caught a couple of nice brookies for the pan.
Good.
A little slow, but they were just before dark. They were coming up in the fast water and hitting a little Doc Hendrickson. And also that little killer fly, that little number 14 or 16 Hornberg with the yellow body.
Yes.
They love that.
They love that.
Yeah, that's a great fly for trout.
It is.
Yeah.
And you went somewhere else, didn't you?
I did.
Well, you're going somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. I will be.
You went to two places, you told me.
Nope. I don't think so.
Oh, you didn't get out on the Branch Lake?
Well, Scotty and Josh went up to Kupsuptic.
Oh, yeah?
Up in Rangeley.
That's right, too. And they caught some salmon, small salmon.
They caught some trout, some brookies.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Then you got another trip planned in a couple of weeks.
Okay. June, I go crazy.
You're going to be a busy boy, aren't
June
you?
June goes too fast for me.
I know it does. Well, that's the time to go.
Yep, going to West Branch, going up to way up north. Having a
DeBully.
Busy month, yeah. Busy
I should
month.
Say.
Yep.
Well, the lakes right now are slow fishing. They slowed up quite a lot since earlier.
It's warming up a little, right?
And Grand Lake Stream is a perfect place to go right now because the water level, as you know, is perfect for fishing.
It was.
You fish everywhere.
Ideal.
Yep. And water's still cold. Plenty of fish still moving around.
Are they? Yeah.
Yep, so they say. The same old flies are still working, especially Norm out there with his
black ghost
Marabou at towards dark.
With his headlamp.
Even after dark.
I don't mind
even after dark.
What he does, he spots them with his headlamp, I think.
I know he does. He's not fooling anybody.
Seriously, Norm, I'll give you a minute to talk about why do you like to fish in the dark?
It's a challenge.
I can't stand to fly fish in the dark because I can't see the line.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I started doing it, it was a little nerve-wracking, but... No, basically before dark, you just establish where you're going to be fishing and how much line you're going to put out. And if you abide by that,
So you do it all with muscle memory after that, right?
Yes. Yeah. After dark, you have to. Yeah. I mean, there's not much. I mean, there isn't any, even the light from the dam isn't going to provide you enough to see what you're doing.
You're not worried about one of those big suckers sneaking up behind you and grabbing you by the leg?
No.
All right.
Well, it's peaceful. It's really peaceful.
Yeah, it is peaceful. You like it. Nobody around. That's why you like it. Solitude.
Brooks and streams are still very low, Paul.
Yes,
we just haven't had the rain. I hope we get a lot more tonight and tomorrow, but it doesn't look like much.
A deluge this week. A deluge. Did I pronounce that right? All week. It's going to rain all week.
I hope so.
Yeah, we need it.
Well, I want to get my garden tilled, so I get a couple of days in there.
Well, you may get a break.
Norm's going to till my garden for me.
A good man.
He's a good man.
He's a good man.
Yep. So anyway, that pretty much wraps it up, except for all these beaver that are destroying these streams right now. There's nothing but dam after dam after dam because they're not trapping them.
Yeah, they're not.
They don't get anything for them. So the wardens are busy blowing culverts and having an awful time.
All right.
Okay.
Good fishing report. Thank you. Our guest tonight, if you joined us late, is Professor Jim Dill from the University of Maine Cooperative Extension Service, and he's going to be here to talk about ticks, and we've got a lot of ticks to talk about. Right, Jim?
We sure do. Okay. Lots of ticks this year.
All right. And if you have a question for Jim, you could call him at what number, Bob?
1-800-966-1039. You have to call the whole number, 1-800-966-1039. To get through.
Okay, and we'll take your calls right after we answer the trivia question. Tonight's trivia question is good for two streamer flies I have. These are both number four supervisors tied by the late Fern Simard up there in the county. I don't know if you knew him or not, Norm.
I know the family.
Yeah. He ties a nice fly. Bob looked him over and said, gee, this guy's good. And if Bob says that, the guy's got to be good, right? So I have a couple of those. They're collector items, and these are provided courtesy of Charlie Bryant, who's no slouch for the fishing rod himself, and we will turn those over to you by U.S. mail if you can answer Jim Dill's question.
All right, here we go. The west branch of the Union River and the east branch of the Union River flow into two different lakes. Name those two lakes.
All right, 1-800-966-1039 is the number. You stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, and we have two callers queued up who want to answer the trivia question and win one of these lovely hand-tied flies by the late Tyre Fern Simard from Aroostook County. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors.
How's it going?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. Enjoying the rain.
Yeah, we need
it.
I'm
over here on Happy Town Road in Ellsworth, and we do need it.
The Happy Town in Ellsworth. Well,
yeah.
I go by you every day.
You do? We're neighbors.
Yeah, I live down on Branch Lake.
Excellent.
Yeah, what's your first name, sir?
Corey.
Okay, Corey, what do you think the answer is?
I believe it is Graham Lake and Green Lake.
Well, we'll have to check with Jim. Jim, is that the right answer?
Sorry, that is not the right answer.
Uh-oh.
Oh, missed it. Good. Well, you got another caller.
Keep well, you got it half right.
So he gets half fly, he gets half a reward.
I can send you the cellophane wrapper off the fly.
There you go. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Well, you guys have a good night.
No hard feelings, Corey, right?
That's right.
All right. We appreciate you listening to the show.
You too.
Yeah, take care. And I'll be passing by you about 8 o'clock tonight on my way to the lake. Okay, we have another caller who may have an answer. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with a trivia question answer. Go ahead.
Is it Graham Lake and Speckle Pond?
All right.
That is correct.
All right. You have won two flies. What's your first name, sir?
Arthur Jaden.
Arthur?
Jaden.
Oh, Jaden. Okay, Jaden. Congratulations to you. Where are you calling us from?
Corinna.
Oh, Corinna. Okay, great. Yep. All right. Well, if you'll stay on the line, Jaden, we'll get your address, and I'll get those flies out to you, if not Monday, Tuesday, all right?
Awesome. Thank you, Paul.
All right. Anything else going on?
No, it's about the ticks. We were down in southern Maine, and we had to pull 20 of us off. We just bumped into one little sumac tree.
Wow.
Me and my daughter, they're crawling up our legs. There were a bunch of dog ticks.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that experience as well when I was out turkey scouting. Okay, well, we're going to, Jim's going to talk about ticks, so stay on the line. I mean, stay tuned. You may learn something, all right?
Thanks, sir.
All right, thank you, Jaden. Okay, that's the correct answer. And you can't find that out, as Bob pointed out, you can't find that out on Google, I don't think. She's pretty smart, but I don't think she's that smart.
Now,
anyway,
if the listeners are hot, I mean, really know what's going on here.
Yeah.
They could put two and two together.
They could, yeah.
You know why I said that?
Why?
Well, I'll say no more. You talked about where you went fishing. You didn't say where. But your question was on the Union River.
Okay. I'll have to digest that in a few minutes here. Anyway, okay. Sometimes you get really intellectual. Okay, anyway, that's the correct answer. Graham Lake. The west branch of the Union River flows into Graham Lake, and, of course, the east branch flows into Spectacle Pond.
Used to be a lot of browns in there. But
yeah, they used to stalk them, but they stopped doing that, I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Anyway, that's the correct answer. Congratulations to Jaden, and we'll get the flies out to him post-haste Tuesday morning. Okay, again, if you just joined us, our guest, we're proud to say, is Professor Jim Dill from the University of Maine Cooperative Extension Service, who's been studying lots of little critters, ticks as well. Jim, just for the benefit of those who may not be as familiar with you as we are, could you tell our listeners a little bit about your operation up there?
Sure. We just opened a new facility in 2019. It's called a Diagnostic and Research Lab, and it houses several different labs in one facility. We have plant pathology there. We have the tick identification and disease diagnostic facility. We have an insect aspect there for identification. We also do Dr. Lichtenwaldner. She is the forensic veterinarian, and she does all of the animal disease diagnostic work. And then we also have aquatic animal health lab there, which is research on fish and lobsters.
Wow, you guys do a lot.
Cover all under one roof. Yeah. It's a unique facility in the country.
Yeah. Are you an entomologist?
By training, I'm an entomologist.
By training, right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, and so if the service you provide, as I recall from our previous interview, is that if somebody gets a tick bite and not sure whether it's a wood tick or whether it's a black-legged tick, they can bring it to your lab, and you will give them an answer. How long does that take?
On identification, if it's immediate. As soon as we get it, we will look at it. If you actually brought it in, we'd look at it and we'd tell you on the spot what it is. If you actually want it tested for any of the disease organisms that are transmitted by the tick, that takes probably 3 days from the time we get it to the time you get the answer, 3 days or less.
Okay. Now, if a doctor, let's say Norm gets the bullseye, the dreaded bullseye, and he goes to his doctor, and he has the tick. He saved the tick in a jar or whatever. Do doctors contact you to find that out?
We do get contacted by doctors, but usually what we tell everybody, this is not a medical service. We are not a medical lab. That if you have a tick bite and it's been on there for a while and it's engorged, you definitely want to go ahead and contact your doctor and then let them follow through on what they decide to do, whether they want to treat you with antibiotic right off or not. Most people then turn around and send it in to us anyway, whether they've been treated or not, just for peace of mind, to find out what was in that tick that was biting them. So with the black-legged tick, or the deer tick, as it's also known, with that one, we tested for Lyme disease, anaplasmosis, and babesiosis, and one other close related organism to the Lyme disease organism. And then the dog tick, we have started testing them. We do a panel on them too. Tularemia. The big one we look for is Rocky Mountain spotted fever with the dog tick. It does transmit it in other states. We haven't found the disease yet here associated with dog ticks, but we figure it's just a matter of time before it gets this far north.
Okay. Getting back to the black-legged tick or the deer tick, so-called deer tick, some of these mysterious diseases that some people get from the infection are really bad news, aren't they?
They are, and what we find is you can get co-infections too, meaning that you can get more than one disease from one tick bite.
You can.
When we test for all three, of the ticks that we test, it's probably 30%+ have, you know, the Lyme disease organism in it. And then it drops dramatically, somewhere under 10% probably for each of the other two diseases, anaplasmosis or babesiosis. And then depending on what we find, there's a small percentage, maybe 1% of the ticks, they'll have two or three disease organisms in them. Wow. So technically one bite could give you three.
Oh boy, that's scary.
Three diseases.
So, what percentage of the black-legged ticks that you get are Lyme infectious, or whatever the correct term is?
It's in probably 35% or so.
About what it is?
Yeah. It's in the 30s somewhere. I can't remember it off the top of my head. It varies a little from year to year, but it's 35% or so.
And those other two diseases that I can't pronounce, babesiosis, is that it?
Babesiosis, yeah.
What percentage were those?
Those are both under 10%.
And under 10%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a caller, Jim, who may have a question for you. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill. Go ahead.
Hey, everybody. It's Matthew in Thorndike, and I'm calling to ask not about ticks, but I have great curiosity about the emerald ash borer and what sort of plan the state of Maine has once these things are discovered in our forest.
We've already discovered them. They're in northern Maine and they're in southern Maine. And so what they do, what the state has already done in those particular areas, they have quarantined those areas for, export of ash from those areas. And they then have started trapping, kind of in a grid out around where they're finding it to try to, keep it in check as much as possible to see what the spread is. Plus, they are testing with these traps throughout the state. They have them all throughout the state, but unfortunately we have found the emerald ash borer here in the state of Maine. We haven't found the Asian longhorn beetle yet, but the emerald ash borer is here.
Wow. And ash is important to you, Matthew, right? Are you still making ash baskets?
I am.
So that the ash tree...
In fact, I have a picture of my son Wolfgang when he was about 3 years old wearing one of my little mini pack baskets in the old WBOM studios up by McDonald's.
Oh, I remember those days.
Hall.
Yeah, I remember those days well. Well, great. Well, we hope...
My son Wolfgang is a gunner's mate on the USS Forrest Sherman DDG-98 in Norfolk, Virginia.
Well, good. We thank him for serving his country. That's great. I didn't realize that. He's grown up a lot since we talked
last.
He's
grown up.
Yeah. Well, you must be proud of him.
I am.
You bet. Okay. Well, thank you, Matthew.
Have a great day, fellas.
Okay, right. Thanks. You too. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. We have another caller standing by. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Bob?
Yeah, go
My
ahead.
My name's Bob. Yeah, I want to assure these people out there that this tick disease is really bad. I've been out of work so far for 11 days, and I had anaplasmosis.
Wow.
And it was from a wood tick or a dog tick, I guess. But on top of that, I had gout attacking me, too, and it was so severe that I was paralyzed. I couldn't move.
Wow.
Wow.
Are you sure it was from a wood tick or a dog tick? I don't think.
Yeah, I had two of them engorged on the back of my leg, and they thought it was a bout with the gout, but it wasn't until they took me in the hospital and they took 16 blood test, and it was anaplasmosis.
Right. What happens a lot of times in those situations is, the as we were talking before the show started, the dog tick is much, much larger than the black-legged tick. And what very well may have happened here was they are in the same habitat, so you might have had both types of ticks on you, but actually found the dog ticks first, then the black-legged or the deer tick may have been on you someplace too, because it's not associated with it here yet in the state of Maine. We have not ever had a case transmitted by the dog tick. So I'm guessing, unfortunately for you, you must have had a deer tick on you there somewhere too.
Well, I pulled a deer tick, but it wasn't stuck in me. It wasn't engorged.
Yep.
And that was when we got back from turkey hunting. And then the next day, I got cold chills and a fever, and then I woke up the next day, and I couldn't move.
Hmm. Yep.
I was paralyzed for about an hour until I could move my legs.
So,
and I had to call a friend to take me to the hospital.
Are you under doctor's care now with medication?
With medication and everything, and it was infection, which was fighting with my gout, so that didn't really help much.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's a very serious problem, the ticks and the disease organisms they transmit.
Yeah, because they had to take neurological tests because they say it could cut down your involuntary muscles depending on how severe it is.
So. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you the we wish you the best of luck, and don't envy your position. That's difficult.
No, it was pretty scary, so I'm telling people out there, pay attention.
You
are bad.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for your call. We appreciate your input. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. Okay, well, there's a case right there. Got to be careful.
Yeah, I do.
We're going to take a quick time out here. Again, if you have a question for Jim Dill, the number to call is
1-800-966-1039.
You stay with us, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors, your host V. Paul and Bob Lehman, right here behind the microphones. And we also have a guest in our studio. He's Jim Dill, Professor Jim Dill from the University of Maine Cooperative Extension Service, answering questions about ticks. And we have another caller backed up, I believe, Norm.
Yes, actually, we got two.
All right, we have two callers. We'll take the first one right now. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Yeah, hello. How are you folks tonight?
We're fine, thanks. Hey. How you doing?
Good. I'm Bill calling from T1R5, and I have a question for Jim.
Okay, sure. Bill, shoot.
For years, it's been very inexpensive and proven very effective to have simple tick collars on dogs. Would it be possible to apply a tick collar to a currently applied moose tracking collar or anything like that to see if that would be effective?
You know, we've had a lot of discussions on the winter tick on moose and what to do to try to treat them. And theoretically, that if you did collar a moose, you could do the same thing there, you know, put a collar on. But that would be such a small number of moose that you could do that with. You know, it wouldn't be of much significance other than to see if it works, probably.
That would be my concern, to see if it did work, if there's any test cases or anything.
Yeah, they haven't done anything like that. I mean, they've had discussions about doing that. Some people have actually said they'd love to just go out with paintball guns, basically, with an insecticide, ivermectin, or one of those things like you put on your dogs, like you were talking about a one-spot treatment, and go out and, they thought that would be a fun way to do it. But again, you'd probably get so few of the ticks. One of the things that they are doing this year is, I think it's zone 4, they've split into two different zones for the moose hunting, and they're allowing more permits in one of them than the other. The idea there is, what they're looking at is to go ahead and try to knock back the population of moose in an area, because one of the things that we think is happening with the moose population in Maine in the winter tick is that we are getting a good population, and they come in contact, and there's more of them around. So if you have fewer moose in an area, they're looking to see if then there's fewer winter ticks. So that's one of the things they're doing for research on it.
Have you been working with Lee Cantor, the moose biologist?
I have. Lee and I contact each other occasionally on things. I don't work directly with him, but he will, you know, call me and
ask questions, or
he texts me, emails me, whatever. Yeah. So yes.
Well, that was a good suggestion, caller. It shows you got your thinking cap on. That's
absolutely
good. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking our call. We listen every week from Malunkus Lake, and we appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. We appreciate you being in the audience. Take care.
Have a good night.
All right. Okay, we have another caller queued up here. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill.
Hi, this is Sean from Somerset County.
Hi, Sean.
I was just wondering, I was just wondering what the future attack is going to be to control this epidemic we have with the ticks.
That's really a good question. That's one of the things that we're looking at. We're looking into grants to try to figure out some of the strategies for manipulation of whether it's habitat or whatever. Out and about in the woods, depending on which tick you want to talk about, whether it's a dog tick, deer tick, or winter tick, they all have different habitats, different life cycles. Like with the winter tick, it spends its full life cycle on one animal. Dog tick, it's usually a couple animals. The black-legged tick / deer tick, it's probably at least three different hosts. So that makes it very difficult to try to control it from the standpoint of the animal side of things. Some states have actually put in feeding stations for the deer to come to, and they have rubs on the side of it, and they have an insecticide on that, so when the deer puts the head through to feed on the grain, it rubs, you know, an insecticide on them. There's another way they're looking at is tick tubes, and they treat cotton balls, and they put the tick tubes out, and the idea here is the white-footed mouse or other small rodents will actually find these cotton balls, take them back, and use it as nesting material, and again, they've got an insecticide on it to take care of the ticks. So there's lots of different strategies that we're looking at, but we're just trying to get a handle on the whole population across the state, and that's one of the things that we've been doing at the lab. Is right now it's passive surveillance, but we're hoping to do a little more active surveillance once we get past this COVID-19 that we've been dealing with and get some students to work with us and that type of thing. So we don't have a good answer yet on how to manage them in on a large scale.
Okay, answer your question, caller.
Yes, it did. I do believe we have to have something done because the ticks are getting really bad.
Yeah, they are.
They are bad. I bet you they're really bad in Somerset County, aren't they?
I don't know. I got a cat and a dog, and I don't even like to see them around some of the time.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
All right, we appreciate the call. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, we have another caller queued up. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Jim Dill.
Yeah, hello, Jim.
Hi, Dan
from Bangor.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got a question on the habitat. I know that they're in grassy areas. I didn't know how thick the vegetation had to be. Can you have them on your front lawn? Just wondering if they can get into the house. Other than attaching to a host, bringing it into the house. I'm not really an outdoors guy. I don't really hunt or fish, but I do love the show. And I've picked several off me this year, and so that's just what I was wondering about their habitat.
Sure. They don't actually, get into the house, like you said, unless they came in on your dog or your cat or, on you. The dog tick is a very hardy tick, and it will be out and about more so than the deer tick. And you'll find them occasionally on an open area in grassy areas, but what we always recommend to do is keep your lawn nicely mowed, and you probably won't have a problem even with the dog tick. Now, the deer tick, on the other hand, which, of course, is the one that we have the most concern about because of the disease organisms, is they're kind of wimpy from the standpoint of they need high moisture. And they like it above 70% humidity. And so what you usually do, you'll find those along the interface of the woods and a field and, you know, down in the duff and that type of thing. And they'll crawl up vegetation, and they do what they call questing, and they get up there and they hang on with their back legs and they wave their front two legs around until something goes by and they just grab onto it. And depending on which stage you're in, that depends too partially on how high up the vegetation they'll go. If it's the first instar or the larval tick, it stays down real low, only 2 or 3 inches, and they're looking for mice and that type of thing. And each stage, as it gets bigger, then it goes to nymph. They go up a little higher, and the adults will probably even quest even a little higher than that. But the thing is, they will move up and down in the foliage along these areas during the daytime, because as the heat gets up during the middle of the day and it actually the humidity may go down, gets a little drier, then the ticks will be lower to the ground. So to answer your question directly, dog ticks, you can find them in you know, some drier areas and, you know, less vegetation. But the deer tick really, really likes to stay on that interface. And if you also think about it, if you watch deer in a field or whatever, they always come out and they walk along that, usually that field interface before they don't come running right out into the field. They'll walk along there, and that's just the perfect place for the ticks to hide out. And that's also, and I'm sure Paul can attest to this because he already talked about it, that's where also the turkey hunters sit, right on that edge of that field, and they sit right in the middle of where the ticks are.
You bet. Okay, appreciate the call, caller.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we have another caller standing by, but I think we're going to do a short commercial break here to pay the bills, and we'll be back and we'll take that call. You stand by, caller. And Bob, you're going to tell us a little bit about General Appliance and Brewer.
Yes, General Appliance and Brewer. They've been with us for a long time, Paul. They've been, I think that's the only commercial they have is with us.
Well, that's good.
That's pretty darn good. It's for over 20 years. That's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they've had sponsors, so what are you going to do?
Well, Al's very happy with his sponsorship.
Yeah. So they have gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, a full line of gas freezers, and, of course, they have top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
Yes. Thank you, Norman. General Appliance is located 91 Center Street and Brewer is your non-electric connection. A family-owned business by Al Elkin have found their niche in these changing energy times. General Appliance is there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliances as well. That's gas, of course. And they have propane appliances and they sell parts of all kinds as well. You knew that, Paul.
Yes, I do.
You've been in there for parts, I bet.
Many, many times. Al's always helped me with my
very
propane
helpful.
Refrigerators at camp.
They're very helpful.
He doesn't come and fix it, but he tells me how to do it.
Yep.
It's been great. Yeah.
Yep, they're great people. And the phone number is?
Gee, off the top of my head, 989-3714.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And they sell our books over there,
I can't
too.
Believe I could just pick that out like that. Huh? That's incredible, isn't it, Norm? Do you see how
it
I picked
incredible.
That out of my brain?
Yes, it is. Better than I would have done.
All right.
Amazing.
Okay. General Appliance and Brewer. We patronize them, and we urge you to do so as well. Okay. Again, Jim Dill is our guest, and he's the man with the answers on the ticks, and we have another caller backed up. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're on Main Outdoors.
Hi.
Hi.
Is Jim Dill our senator?
Yes.
Oh, you are? Oh, I didn't realize that. No kidding.
Yes.
Oh.
I do both.
Oh, golly. Who says this program's not educational? I didn't realize we had a luminary in our midst as well.
Right.
Okay, Senator Dill, I mean Professor Dill, you want to answer that question? Or does she have a question?
Well, maybe a little bit of a discussion. I think Senator Dill was aware that we had a bill up a little while ago that had a whole lot of people testifying about how they appreciated having their coyotes and were trying to mitigate some of the nonstop killing of them. I won't go
okay,
into
well, I
that,
think we've got to stick to the topic tonight. Maybe some other time we can have them on. Let's continue to talk about ticks, okay?
Yeah. So what I wanted to say is a lot of people were trying to get it across that the coyotes are major eaters of our field mice, and those are the guys that carry the Lyme disease bacterium that cause anaplasmosis and the Lyme. And my dog tested positive for both this year, and I was one of the people testifying. And I really would encourage people to take a second look at our coyotes.
Well, I guess I think you're trying to make the tick connection, but I'm not sure there is one there. Anyway, we appreciate the call.
About the coyotes are major.
All right, we appreciate the call. Thank you. Do we have another caller standing by? We do.
Yes, we do.
Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Professor Jim Dill.
Yes, I had a question. My question was, what can you put on for to protect you and your dogs from the ticks?
For a person, well, two things. For the dog, talk to your vet for a couple reasons. They'll either give them a tablet or a liquid that you can put on the dog. And what this does, the tick will feed on the dog for less than an hour, and it will kill the tick. And with the organisms that so far were associated with the black-legged tick, it takes, you know, a good probably 24 hours of feeding before the organism is transmitted as far as the bacterial ones are concerned. Also, there is a Lyme disease vaccine that you can get at your vet for your dog, and I would strongly recommend that you talk to your vet about doing that. As for yourself, the best repellent you can use is a material called permethrin, and you can get that in two ways. One is you can actually buy clothing that already has permethrin impregnated in it, and you know that's what you use when you go out where you'll find ticks, or you can actually get a spray bottle of it at your local, you know, big box store or hardware stores, and you spray that on, but you can only spray that on clothing. Now, if you want to use repellents like DEET is, you know, somewhat limited in keeping ticks off you, but that's one of the ones that you can actually use on your skin. So I always recommend the best way to go out when you're out. It's maybe not the best fashion statement, but always tuck your pants legs into your socks when you're out there, because as we've already talked about, the ticks come in low, usually knee high or less, and if they're down low and if you have your socks inside your pant legs, of course, if they get in your shoe or your sock, then they're right inside and they're on your skin, and
on their way up
they're already up your leg. But you have it all tucked in, they got to climb up all your clothing, and you have a much better chance of seeing them, especially if you have light colored clothing on too.
All right,
so those are the recommendations.
How about no fly zone clothing you buy?
I think that's what it is. I think that's permethrin treated.
Same thing, huh?
Okay. And I always do a tick check.
Okay, we're getting more calls.
Thank
and
you
we
so much.
Appreciate
you're welcome.
Appreciate the call. We have another caller queued up. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hey, cedar oil works best on dogs and people.
Cedar oil? Yep.
Yes, try it. It does work.
Does it really?
Well, as a matter of fact, buy an old farmer's almanac and you'll find out there's all kinds of stuff in there that's for real.
Yeah.
And concerning the ticks, the outbreak started in the 20s. When all the fancy girls from all across the nation had to have feathers in their hats, and there was a dove that was up here that they used to come up here and trap them and take them down to Coney Island and have them shot in the arcades down there. And that's where the tick population took off, because this bird had control over this tick situation at the time.
Wow.
And
I've never heard that theory. Yeah.
Well, it's not a theory. It's a proven fact in my mind.
Okay.
Because I've done some research, but go ahead.
All right. Well, we appreciate you helping make our program more educational.
And,
thank you.
This is Pete from Winslow, Maine, up on the ridge.
Okay, Pete. All right. Nice to hear from
you,
Pete.
Thank you, gentlemen, for what you do.
All right. Thank you for calling. We appreciate it. Okay. I wanted to ask you, would you spray your clothing with this permethrin?
I do spray my clothing with
it. Doesn't make you nervous?
No. Nope. No.
Nope. Not harmful?
No. Nope. I mean, you know, you make sure you don't get it on your skin.
Yeah.
So you always take your clothing, don't spray it on, you know, when you cut your clothing on. I always spray it. And what I usually do is I will, you know, it's like I have a pair of blue jeans, an old pair of sneakers or whatever I have.
Yeah.
I spray the permethrin on there. And then I wear it out if I'm going to be in a tick-related infested area or where I think they might be. And then when I come home, I take that clothing right off. I put it in a plastic bag, and I store it. And then the next time I go out,
that I'm going to be in that area, I'll do that again.
How long is that good for on that?
Well, you can wash it two or three times, too, and it will work.
Can. Yeah.
But, you know, I usually just do it that way a couple times, and then I'll wash it. And, you know, but the ones that you buy that's impregnated with it already, they'll say that the washings on that, you can wash them, you know, 10 dozen times, and it's still effective.
You know, I sprayed my camo clothing before turkey hunting. And then I went out scouting without my camo clothing, and again, as I told you, I got covered with these wood ticks. I should have had my camo clothing on, but that stuff does work.
It does, yes.
Another caller. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors.
Hey, so it's a little off topic. I was just wondering if the guest could, if he had any information about the spotted lantern fly. So the reason I ask is because I work for a freight company down in Portland, and about a year ago we were asked to start inspect our line haul drivers were started asked to start inspecting the trucks every morning when they come back for the eggs and other signs of this insect. And it's an invasive species that is really harmful to trees, and they're really concerned about it coming up here into Maine. And I was wondering if you had any info about it.
Yeah, sure.
I just want to get the word out there because it's pretty serious, and it's another threat to the state of Maine and our forest product industry and that sort of thing.
You're absolutely right. It is a serious pest. It's down in the mid-Atlantic states now and moving northward. Yeah. And inspection is certainly the way to go. And as you mentioned, it has a wide, wide range of hosts, trees, other plants, and it's a piercing, sucking mouthpart type insect. So it does a lot of damage with sucking juices out of plants. And
what is it called again?
The spotted lantern fly.
Spotted lantern fly. Wow. And it sucks sap out of trees. And and the reason I wanted to get it out there so that if people happen to, it's kind of like a moth. It's an egg, and then it hatches into a moth. It's got spots on its wings. And it's going to be, if it gets up here, it may be here now. We don't know, but it's really detrimental.
Okay, and we appreciate your call. We're up against the clock, caller. Thank you so much.
Yep, no, that's good. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I don't think we're going to be able to take any more calls, are we, Norm? I think we're out of time. Again, if somebody wants to contact you, Jim, how would they do that?
You can contact us at the University of Maine, Tick Lab, Tick ID Lab, and that's all you got to do is just Google that, and it will get you right there. That tells you all the information on how to submit a tick to us and get it into us if you want it tested or if you just want an ID on it. You can get a hold of me directly. That's james.dill@maine.edu, and I'm the one that will answer the other questions as well as ticks. But we have other people in the tick lab that do all the tick stuff as well. So we have quite a group there that's working on various and sundry things.
We appreciate you being here so much. It's nice to have you here in person. None of us have masks. That's really great. Thank you for being here, Jim. We appreciate
it. No problem.
Yes. Jim Thorne is going to host the show next week, and his guest will be Senator Russell Black and Ron Fournier. And we'll see you in 2 weeks right here on
Maine Outdoors.